You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hardcore Podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
Oh, and that felt so classic. Great job, PK.
Thank you so much. So today we're going to be, sort of shooting the shit, answering some questions that you all had. But before we do so, let's jump in to some sponsors.
Beautiful. I will start. We're going to go down, take 95 all the way down to Raleigh, North Carolina. To visit our buddies at To Live a Lie Records. We're going to go, Tom, to tolivealie.com. And I'm going to go to their web store. Really nice website. And I think you can, if you go to tolivealie.com, you got the main site, you got the Bandcamp link, very convenient. And then the web store. Go over to that web store. We speak highly of the distros of several of our partner label, sponsor type friends. To Live a Lie is no different. Right now, and this might change by the time you hear this next week, but right now, at the top of their new products, do you guys ever do this? Sometimes I go to web stores and I click on new products. You guys do that?
Yes, all the time.
It's the move. You gotta, you get the new stuff. To Live a Lie has at the top of their new products in their distro the Lethal Means Zero Sum Game LP. Some of you might remember I big up this for my end of the year 2020 list. Record's been selling quick. I think this might be some of the last handful of copies available. So I strongly recommend you pick that up. Yo, check this. Item two. It's like my basket was filling itself. The Drop Dead Arms Race 7-inch Flexi. I didn't know this, full transparency. I didn't know this existed.
Same.
This was originally, I'm reading right from the item, but it's worth it. Originally released in 2018, digital only. Two tracks recorded in 95, but finished in 2013. Yo, love shout it. Out to these long tail bands. You know what I mean? A cover of BGK's Arms Race and Poison Idea's Give It Up. Here's the cool part. Proceeds from the sale of this record will be donated to United We Dream, the largest immigrant youth-led community in the country. Over 400,000 members, United We Dream fights for justice and dignity for all immigrants. UWD creates welcoming spaces for young people, regardless of immigration status, to support, engage, and empower them to make their voices heard and win. UWD has led the way in supporting DACA and the DREAM Act, reforming ICE, and fighting against unjust deportation and detentions. For more information, go to unitedwedream.org. So, yo, Drop Dead tracks, cool covers, and supporting a good cause. I'm in. So that's what I'm getting today. On the To Live a Lie side, they got some news putting out the Peace Test LP this summer. Will teased me and was like, yo, there's some other really cool stuff coming up this year. He's excited. He's got a big year planned. If you haven't heard the Peace Test EP he put out this past year, please pick that up while you're in his web store. So again, tolivealie.com, and let them know that Axe to Grind sent you. Okay, Pat.
All right, Bob, are you on the website right now?
I am.
Would you do me a favor and see if there's any agoraphobic nosebleed in the store at the moment?
You know, in this kind of store, you almost always hope for some. Only via the This Comp Kills Fascists Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Okay.
I don't believe that agoraphobic nosebleed appears on the comp, but it's curated by Scott Hull.
Interesting. Okay. I just on a whim, I was listening to, I think it's like the second, I don't know. It's Frozen Body Stuff with Dope, right? That one, mm-hmm. Which I really don't care for the cover, but first time I'd listened to it in probably a decade, honestly. And that is that is still difficult music. That is still like it still stands as music that is going to make your parents unhappy if you're listening to it in the car.
Their side of the Converge split that I own, pristine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
oh yeah,
I've had a lot of conversations about outsider music recently, and how, you know, for the most part, I'd say, to a normal person's ears, a lot of stuff we cover might fall in that. But then there's bands who stand as the outsiders to outsiders. And, you know, long tradition, like the Melvins, Flipper. I think Agoraphobic Nosebleed hits into that. Like, no, this is for the true ones. This is for the freaks with the 2-3s.
Yeah. Everybody, if Agoraphobic Nosebleed is not on your radar, which I have to imagine... They're not the most active band. I have to imagine that, and they kind of fall out of classic stature for a minute there. It was them and Pig Destroyer were two bands that were mentioned in pretty much every conversation about extreme music. And now maybe not as much, because life is long and things change.
The march of time.
Yeah. But honestly, worth checking out for everybody. Again, there's nothing pleasant about it, but I'm going to talk about something pleasant. Let's do a 180 here.
Let's go pleasant.
I'm going to go to Run for Cover Records. I'm a current student at that academy through Self Defense Family. Very grateful for all their work over there at Run for Cover. Good people. They put out some pleasant records by a fellow that goes by the moniker Field Medic, right?
Yes.
And the reason I'm talking about this today is because a hardcore musician whom our listeners would know.
Confidant. Contacted Patriot.
Yeah, contacted Bob the other day and said, you know, these Field Medic jams, pretty good. Pretty good. And the way that he said it was maybe some skepticism, because I don't know if everybody's seen this Field Medic fella, but it kind of has like a very what the fuck is this? Like sort of like Silver Lake-ish sort of look, right? Like this sort of California coffee shop energy, and
for sure.
And it's kind of like it might be off-putting for somebody that's listening to Pig Destroyer.
Yeah, it might not dip with your jive, you know.
Yeah, but here's the report from this very credible hardcore musician. These are catchy songs. And I thought that the sort of the willingness to just accept, you know, this is a thing like we played the Regional Justice Center tracks on the last episode. A thing that irritates me about Ian, the mastermind behind that band, is that he really, really likes the Beatles to the point that it feels like a bit, you know? Because the Beatles fucking suck. But to him, that's just, hey, these are well-written, pleasant songs. And I do admire that he's able to just say that. Because if I hear the Beatles, I immediately have a fit and want to kick a radio. But it's in the same way, this musician who plays hardcore music really just saying, can't deny these songs, made me say, you know what? I'm going to give Field Medic a shot. So I think that our listeners should give Field Medic a shot. I think there's two records. Am I wrong, Bob? I believe two.
So, yes. The most recent one is Floral Prince. And I've heard...
There are three.
This is the brand new one. That's right. Two before. So this one I've actually heard might be the best of the three. So everyone should go check it out. Runforcoverrecords.com.
There you go.
Tom, I have a question for you before we dive into today. Can I ask it?
Sure.
Did you like the unbridled 15-year-old mad at his parents fury that Patrick unleashed on the Beatles moments ago?
Yeah, it's like, Mom, this fucking sucks. And I feel like I pictured him like sitting backwards in a station wagon, like facing the road behind.
Yeah.
Like a war song. I know a lot of people that are like, I feel like the Beatles and U2 – people are either like best band ever or like they hate it with such a passion. Like no one hates Bruce Springsteen necessarily. They don't like him, but they don't fucking have this like searing hatred in their heart. For whatever reason, the Beatles ignore that in people, and I don't totally get it.
They were so ubiquitous, and there's so many people who only like the Beatles.
I was born in 68, not 64.
Yeah, I know. That's right. So he wasn't there right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you pick up who are like parents.
I think it's so often the conversation gets to the Beatles, and it's sort of like, it's the dude who, okay, yo, Tom, you'll get this. I got irrationally mad listening to a sports podcast today because there was a Boston sports guy on who was kind of saying like, oh, well, you know, like, of course Michael Jordan's the best, but I'll never say it. It's Larry Bird. It's Larry Bird. Larry Bird's the best. And it's like, I wanted to shoot him in the face. I love Larry Bird, but like, he's clearly not the best. This is, that's kind of, they end up being a conversation stopper. You can't even reason or talk with someone about the Beatles. If they think the Beatles are the best band, there's no conversation. It's just whatever you're, and you know, I like the Beatles. I like many songs. I like a couple records, but they're not infallible. They've released bad albums, you know? So I understand Pat's energy. It did remind me of the kid who was like, the family's driving, going to pick up Little Caesars. Oh no, Little Caesars is closed. Guess we have to have Burger King. And Pat flipped the hat off.
No! Burger King French fries suck, Mom.
Sucks, Mom. Fuck this. Hey, watch your language, Patty. Fellas, how we doing? How we feeling today? We didn't even do any of the like true conversation, like what do they call it? It's the we've talked about it before, but the loosening up before we get into it today. It was more clinical. We had business to discuss.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, since becoming a Wall Street broker and
a rail baron over there.
Yeah, I'm a magnate of some type.
And Jordan Belfort over here.
Yeah, I'm going to watch Wolf of Wall Street. Everybody, I made a $50 investment in the stock market today, and immediately wanted to watch Wolf of Wall Street as though I was doing things. It is fucking hilarious that people that are really into stocks don't see themselves as compulsive gamblers. Same shit.
It is gambling. It is so gambling.
100%. With some information.
You're right. Some information.
Very, very little.
Theoretically, the more information you have, it starts to become a crime, which confuses me as well. Like, right. Nobody ever told me in school, like I always thought, like, yeah, the more information I can find, I should be able to use that to my advantage. Oh, wait, there's a certain line where it becomes criminal. Fuck the fuck off. And then the real deal is the, the whole, we got to get into the meat of this because I am happy. This is the way. This is our revolution, right? Let's rebel by taking over the stock market via message boards and Discord servers.
Here's my thing, though, with that. Not to be – I'll be Pat for today. The role of Patrick Kinlan will be played by his understudy, Tom Sheehan.
Mm.
And Morgata brought this up, too, and I tend to agree. Why are we acting like everybody in that Reddit thread was just some rando like Pat? Like, this is a fucking – this could be someone like a pump and dump for some fucking millionaire too.
For sure. For sure.
Hey, if everybody can get in, we're in.
Tom, there's that for sure. But I would also urge people to be very mindful of very obvious disinformation. And what I mean by that is I've seen two items come up in the last hour and a half about how this is tied to the alt-right. Oh, there is, I want everybody to know this. As of Wednesday, the week before this arrives, there is literally no evidence to that. Zero. And nor could there, it really couldn't be, unless you found out that the person that was feeding the information at the very beginning was somehow tied to really ugly politics. But there's no reason to believe that this is it started as a goofy internet thing, and then became for many people a way to maybe speculate, make a little bit of money. And then for other people, it became a way to voice their frustration against Wall Street fat cats. But
ultimately it's a $1 billion troll.
Yes. And there could be really, really bad repercussions. It's entirely possible. Law of unintended consequences for sure. But everybody, when you see information about a thing that feels intentionally discrediting, just take inventory and read it, what is being presented, to see if there's any facts there, because it feels very convenient that the worst accusation that you can make in polite society is being leveled against the people who are destroying the bankers right now. That seems very convenient to me. So, you know, maybe we'll find out there's some massive scheme here, but it just feels like, oh, maybe the fix is in. Maybe the counter narrative has started spinning because there's a bunch of very wealthy people who are nervous about what's happening.
Yeah, like what's the worst thing we could say about them? All right, there you go.
Yeah, precisely. So just a thing to keep in mind, people, about, you know, the way that things get spun. But I'm wealthy now, guys. You need anything?
Would you turn? What are you at right now?
He's at a Bugatti and two Ferraris, I think.
Yeah. Are you going to watch the Wolf of Wall Street? Because his I haven't seen it in a long time. The woman who plays Harley Quinn,
Margot Robbie.
Yeah. Margot Robbie, she's great in this, and she's listed as from Bay Ridge, Brooklyn.
Yes,
because this full transparency. So in school, in grad school, when I was doing like an externship in a psych hospital that I didn't get paid for, I worked with my sister on the market. And like I was in, had like almost daily conversations with Jonah Hill's character.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's not his real name. Belfort is Jordan Belfort. But like that guy is a real person that used to call the office like every day. And he's just like that.
Yeah.
Better
believe it.
I know
that that's supposed to be a somewhat dark character, but he's a character, and those people truly exist. Like there's
100%. Yeah.
Yes.
Really odd people out here.
But I mean, you know, and also a movie like that's not as kind of talked about that deals with this actually really interestingly, a movie called Boiler Room.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yep. Fun movie.
Really fun.
But movie. I mean, same idea, like this hedge fund, like bullshit. They're like pumping fucking penny stocks. And then it becomes, I mean, the thing was kind of like, this is a members only club that some people got through the door and they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're not supposed to know about this.
You're not supposed to know our scheme. Everybody isn't supposed to pump it in and then fool some other people. And everyone gets out at the same time. Shit.
Right. And then people get on like, you know, the biggest problem is that like, you know, now that like people have seen what's behind the curtain, it's like these motherfuckers buy it, assuming that GameStop is going to go out of business sooner rather than later. They have MSNBC and CNBC and all this stuff to go on and be like, and like crush it. So that like $20 stock is now $10 and they're like making money all the way.
Yes. Yeah.
But like it's same idea. And now when the contract is coming up, like the options are coming up and now everyone's running to buy, to sell to the people that they're contractually obligated to. And it just keeps going higher. It's fucking incredible.
Have there been two non-celebrity people who have been more blessed by casting than Jordan Belfort and Nadine Carditi, who was his wife during that time? Imagine your movie gets made and you're being played by Leonardo DiCaprio. And imagine that your asshole ex-husband's movie's getting made and you're getting played by Margot Robbie. Could be worse for both of them. That's such like, imagine being represented on screen by somebody. And she, by the way, Nadine Carditi is a very beautiful woman, but like, imagine just like how dope it would be to be like, yeah, that's supposed to be me.
Yeah, I mean, I think
dope as hell.
It's a fair assumption that neither of them are as attractive as their counterparts. I mean, like, it's just like mathematically almost nearly impossible.
Yes, correct. This Nadine woman is a really a beautiful girl.
Very beautiful woman, but Margot Robbie is.
Yeah.
And he's a good looking dude. He's a handsome guy, but like,
yeah.
Leo,
no Leo.
No Leo. Leo can play. Leo's going to play all three of us in the Axe to Grind biopic. So just
I like that.
Just like different hairstyles. We're all in.
Oh, and I could be like, he could play me in like dad bod Leo, like era. I like it. I'm down.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a good representation of all three of us. So,
Jordan Belfort's still out there just fucking giving speeches.
Yep.
Yo, I want to say this to the Reddit investors and anyone out there. There's power in numbers, and the fucking super rich have known that forever. And there's more of us than them. If we were all doing it, damn. Let anybody who wants to start the Axe to Grind Investment Club, get at us. We were in.
As long as it doesn't fuck with the Mets, I'm good.
Yeah.
I mean, Tom, I think unfortunately everything fucks with the Mets.
Oh my God. Like, there's no way. You can't have any time of positivity. No,
what about Lindor, though? We're feeling good about Lindor.
Yeah. And then their fucking general manager comes out. Like, it's proven that he's a fucking scumbag.
Yeah.
And now, like, the guy that was worth $14 billion just lost $3 billion on this thing. Yeah. Yeah, that was the rumor. I don't know how much that's actually going to come to bear, but like that's apparently what the we just can't be happy. I love Lindor and Carrasco. Great.
Wait, isn't this the second Mets finances draining scandal that's happened in the last 10 years?
Yes, because Bernie Madoff.
Yo, the Mets are just rubes, man. The Mets will fucking buy anything.
Yeah, I mean, the Madoff thing was also sort of. I'm not familiar with, like, that was just kind of like it's literally like impossible to get the returns that this guy was promising.
Yeah. But people just like the story, you know? So,
and they're like, well, fuck it. I got money. You know, it was a pyramid scheme for all intents and purposes, but like, this was like standard kind of operating. Like, this wasn't like anything that was out of the ordinary. Just people got wise to it and were like, hey, we could do this. And like, screw over a ton of fucking hedge funds who prey on weakened companies and all that sort of stuff. So it's really not the worst thing in the world. But
can I shift the conversation wildly with a fun fact that I learned today?
Of course.
So
we expect nothing less.
How skeptical are you guys of cruises?
I've been on two.
Never been on one. We'll go on one.
Okay.
Fun.
So,
at some point,
you know, with all the COVID and how really stressful it was for people that were on cruises, they got a particularly bad reputation last year, right? And prior to that, they always kind of had, like, you know, if somebody gets sick on a cruise, everybody gets sick. If the food is tainted, everybody gets sick. There's Legionnaires' disease, blah, 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 blah. But today I learned that part of the reason that cruises look so bad in the public eye is because they're obligated to report. They're compelled to report, but hotels are not. So conceivably a large hotel could have all of the problems infection wise as all the cruises did, but there's no reason for them to report anything. How wild is that?
So because they're bringing it into other ports while the other thing is stationary.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine there's a reason for why they're compelled to report. That would
make sense, I guess.
But it's just an interesting idea that, like, I went through my life thinking, oh yeah, those things are they must not have good ventilation. I was having all these thoughts in my mind about why it would be that you would get sick on a cruise, but it seems to be the case that statistically you're just as likely to get sick at a Holiday Inn. You know what I mean?
Right. They don't have to tell anybody.
Right. So it's a bit like,
and the turnover is much higher too.
That's true.
I want to ask you something.
Yes, please.
It comes from a place of love, right?
Yes, please.
Why were you going on a cruise?
I wasn't planning on it.
Why are you spending time on this, man? What should you do?
Bob, my day. Brain.
I know.
Listen, my brain is a sponge and every day I'm absorbing new things. Like, for example, here's a fun one right off the top. Are you familiar with the actress Beatrice Dahl?
Yes, I am, actually. Yes.
Okay. So French woman, kind of, you know, in the 90s,
had a moment,
kind of like a femme fatale. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know anything about her personal life. I do now. In January 2005, while making a film about prison life in Brest, Dahl met Gwenal Mazina, serving a 12-year prison sentence for assaulting and raping his ex-girlfriend. She married him after 24 one-hour visits and spoke on his behalf at a hearing at his for his early release. However, according to a 2015 profile of Dahl, she said the marriage was a complete disaster.
Wow.
How wild. Like, I don't know this woman. She's not an American celebrity. She's a French celebrity. Yes. And like, how fucking crazy is that?
Oh, can you go to that last sentence in that life and career section that you're reading? Can you read that out loud?
Yeah, sure. Interviewed on the French TV program Devian in 2016, Dahl said she used to work in a morgue and she and her friend sold body parts of corpses. She also said that while on acid, she ate a dead man's ear.
How are you making books, bro?
This is a celeb. She's doing it.
Oh my God.
So anyways, if we need to get this investment stuff going so Patrick can dedicate all of his time to this stuff more than the 6 to 8 hours he does currently.
We got a big brain, guys.
Guys, we got some questions, got a ton. We're going to dive into it, some music. Before I do, Patrick, I have a little Wayback Machine question for you. Think back to the Tiger's Jaw end of year tour.
Mm-hmm.
I forget who else, but they had a flute player and rode in a short bus. Another band toured with you, perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
Weird openers in every city. I remember in Montreal, one of the openers had a song about, like, pony rape and opened their set screaming, "What the fuck is up?" And the person telling me this said, "I wonder if he remembers that." And do you remember that?
I don't remember that. The only interesting opener that I remember in my life, I remember
he just dissed so many bands.
Fucking Christ.
These are very memorable.
Not like the band who had a song about pony rape.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Okay. I remember a good friend of our band was in a band that opened for us in Minneapolis where the singer was doing like a very affected kind of like Blood Brothers thing where he touched everyone. To watch Andrew from my band just be like grinded upon by this like theater troupe sort of dude was very funny. So that one sticks out. And also with Drug Church played a show in Atlanta where I didn't know the words to Limp Bizkit songs. I largely don't, except for Gold Cobra, Gold Cobra. But they're,
I did it I didn't all know, for the,
didn't know, didn't know what he was saying. So at the end of the song, it sounded like he was like, I forget, goddamn, I'd have to look it up. But it was so weird. I looked around like I was in outer space because it sounded like he was like saying some like very wild white pride shit. And I was like, is anybody here with me? You know what I mean? But apparently everybody knew the lyrics and he just kind of, he didn't mush mouth them. I guess he said them, but maybe it's an Atlanta accent. I had no idea what this man was saying. I was like, what did he just say? Can somebody tell me what that man just said? but I didn't know. I'll try to remember what the line was. It's, oh fuck. It's that one. It's a Limp Bizkit song that ends on a bold statement. It ends on like a, like, last note of the song is the last line, and the last line is something like, fuck, it's not break stuff. I don't know what the fuck it is, but at any rate, those stick out in my head because I had to like walk around and be like, hey, am I insane? What was that? And people were like, oh, that was Limp Bizkit. And I was like, okay.
Just checking.
What was the last line? I'll try to find out what it is.
Do a little while we're recording and answering other questions, maybe do some Limp Bizkit lyric research.
Maybe search on Wikipedia. One last thing on the stock thing.
Please.
Yes.
Which is pretty fucking hilarious. So I meant to send this to you guys. It was a tweet by Hamza Shaban, who's like a market reporter. Part of the GameStop absurdity and chaotic revelry is seeing news sites, news outlets publish Reddit usernames with a straight face. So this was on MarketWatch, which is like a, you know.
Yes.
So let's see. Before you can come up with an exit strategy, or if you're still on the fence, decide whether to jump in. You need to form an opinion about the GME bull thesis without considering the short squeeze, says this user, Thick Dad's Club. With two C's, no K, Thick, T-H-I-C-C, Dad's Club.
Well, we have our stock rebrand, Axe to Grind spinoff coming next week, Thick Dad's Club. Join us Thursday evenings for reports from the Reddit investment crew. Thank you very much. Man, that's so good. I love when the media has to do that bullshit.
Oh, it's fantastic.
All right, guys, let's talk some HC. Very first question, best splits. I feel like we've answered this, but best split records.
Oh, man.
I don't know about, you know, classic splits, but maybe it'd be cool if a band like Pain of Truth and Age of Apocalypse did a split 7-inch.
I would buy that.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I liked the Coalesce Get Up Kids split.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where they both covered each other.
Oh, yeah. I always like that as a move for a split single, for sure.
I mean, Get Up Kids covering Coalesce is, like, you wouldn't know it was the same song. Yeah. And it was fun, cool shit.
Best split to me, I mean, Faith Void is really easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also just classic. I think it's funny when bands have really great songs hidden on split EPs.
Yeah.
A couple examples, the 10-Yard Fight Fast Break split. One of the best fast break songs is hidden on that split. The End of Year Adorno split has one of the best end of year songs. I believe Audrey Kishline is on that record. Yeah, like splits are funny, man. There's not.
Did they go away for a while? Like, yeah. And so, like, if you think about it, all right, so you think, like, all right, Faith and Void.
Yep.
That the split, right?
Yep.
I can't remember. And maybe just because that kind of eclipsed the rest of them. Do you remember like a 1989 split 7-inch?
So a few, like, but they were in like ancillary little pockets, like Infest PHC did a split.
That early?
Yeah. I think Life's Blood, Sticks and Stones, that might be 90.
Sure. Okay.
But there's just little, Bad Trip Go is like 90, 91.
But there's no 80, like,
there's no,
where's like the classic Pro-Mags fucking Raw Deal split or something? You know what I mean? Whatever.
Like,
you know?
Like, there was, because what happened, I think, is that there's a tension between splits and comps. Like, yo, if you divvied up the way it is and did a bunch of splits, it would fucking suck, but it's awesome as a comp. And there's, like, every day I'll take a comp where you have a few songs by one bit. Like, yo, comps are sick when it's like, oh, we're going to do three fucking side-by-side songs. Fine, whatever. You know, one Youth Today. Like, there's no rules with it. Splits, one side, each band, kind of cool. I get weird about the three-way splits because then it feels like you just should have done the four-band comp. Yeah. Pat, aren't you on a four-band split, but it's, which essentially is a comp, right? Like Code Orange, Self-Defense,
World is
Tiger's Jaw, right? So that could have just been called like a comp, but you know, I wonder if there's a marketing thing there, you know?
Yeah, probably. I mean, comps are were dead for a minute. I'd have to check. We'd have to talk to somebody that put one out in the last 2 years to really get a feel if they're still dead.
The One Scene Unity comp that From Within Records did sold out in one day.
See, that's what I like to hear, because you and I both know that the two labels that we got a lot of respect for were fucking struggling to sell comps for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Things ebb and flow. For my pick, I'm going to go with the Hate Breed Neglect split. There's no reason to really do that because the Hate Breed songs, if I remember correctly, appeared on the LP. But I think that the Neglect song, 2 Foot City, only appeared on that until the compilation, if I remember correctly. So I'm going to go with that one also because it introduced me to both bands.
Oh, that's a cool one too. When you get a split that introduces people. Yeah. Really, there's also splits. I think Tom mentioned the Converge of Agoraphobic Nosebleed split. That's kind of a one-sided split. No diss to Agoraphobic Nosebleed. I'm sure for many people, they love the Agoraphobic Nosebleed side. Tiger's Jaw, Balance and Composure. I know there's people who love both, but to me, the Tiger's Jaw side is some of their stronger material.
Yeah, like the hardcore Jace ones that are great.
Yeah.
You know, like Hot Water Music Alkaline Trio, like stuff like that.
Hot Water Music Leatherface, right?
Yep. Also oh, great. What was that series? That Hot Water Music
Leatherface? BYO.
Yeah, the BYO split. That was cool. The Death Wish Dead Man's Hand stuff. That was cool.
Oh, those are great.
Yeah, was the Suicide File Hope?
R&R.
Suicide File R&R. Suicide File did Hope Con split too, though. That was one of the.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of something else. I'm thinking they put out a box set.
Yes, which was that had a few of those in there, I think.
God damn it. Yeah.
No, because there was like a weird. There was like a weird. Grip of 7 inches, they all kind of
blacklisted First Blood, right? That's where Eye for an Eye was.
Eye for an Eye, right? Like, so there's up until that recent single, that's where you could find Eye for an Eye, which is like, yo, this is a staple of their set. Like, yeah. What the fuck? Yeah, yo, shout out to Splits, shout out to Streets of Hate, who's doing the Pain of Truth Age of Apocalypse split. And guess who sent that question in? Shameless self promotion, Alex Casey.
Smart. I better get an art credit. All I'm saying.
I think you should.
Hit me up,
guys. Shows on a floor or shows on a stage?
Stage.
Fuck. Probably stage. Yeah.
Stage, but you know, I like the stage that's 36 inch. So it's 3 feet high.
Yeah.
Really good for stage dives. Once you get any higher than that, once you get to the 48, that's up on a lot of, that's at people's chest plate for most people, too high. Yeah. And then you feel real detachment. Like, yo, if you have a small crowd there, you're having to bend all the way down to pass that mic.
Terrible.
And even shorter than that, like I can even do the 12, you know, just the riser stage. That's cool. That's fine.
Oh yeah.
Floor shows, the more weird or Jace you get, the better. But
I like those two though; they're fun.
Yeah. Like
they're a hassle though sometimes.
Yeah.
Like when you're playing like drum set bouncer and singer, and deck man.
Yeah, totally. Okay, let's see here. Not a lot of folks cite Rorschach when discussing metalcore. Are they not roots?
No, definitely roots.
Yeah, definitely roots.
I mean, I think I can speak for myself and for Converge. That's kind of where we both got the idea.
Yeah. And like so countless others.
So many others, but like Converge is like, you know, A level metalcore. GameStop level metalcore, right? Like
they're in the they have G14 classification metalcore. Yeah, for sure.
I think, you know, you ask any, I mean, if you listen to, I mean, I feel like a lot of folks probably aren't maybe not as hip as to Rorschach because they kind of ebb and flow like their popularity. There's stuff that like when Charles's voice is higher, like you couldn't tell me that wasn't like a Converge song that someone else recorded.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, I think that the Rorschach records, there was a time when they were compiled, like there was a discography CD of sorts, I think. And I always felt like it was maybe too much material to take in at once.
Yeah, the 28 songs. Oh, it's Autopsy.
Yes, correct. Right. And I had that first and I listened to it and I liked it like that. I had that pretty young, high school for sure. And then I eventually got Remains Today and Protestant on vinyl. And I remember the difference. Like I loved listening to those separately. And
because the other one is kind of all over the place because there's some parts that it's like his voice, he sounds like a different singer.
Yeah, and I think they actually make good vinyl listens. I think that, and they're good album listens, and having them to be able to be kind of singular documents really helps. I think it mirrors the way I feel about Swizz, who had the No Punches Pulled discography, a lot of material, and I liked but didn't love it, and would frequently not go back to it because I just felt like it was so much material. And you know, in recent years, I've really found that the LP, The Hell Yes, I Cheated, is just great as a singular document, you know?
Right.
Okay. Best Texas hardcore band.
I mean,
there's a few answers, right? There's a few answers, right? So, Tom, what are the
Power
three
Trip
answers?
I mean, I would say Power Trip, Bitter End, Iron Age.
Right. Patrick?
Bitter End.
And I go Iron Age, Power Trip, Bitter End, and I love all three. And I think it speaks to how important those three bands are, that like they shifted bands like Big Boys out of the conversation for most people. I'm the kind of dude who also would bring up bands like Severed Head of State, World Burns to Death, but those bands are in a tier under Iron Age, Power Trip, and Bitter End. I might be able to make an argument where I'd slot Severed Head in, or maybe World Burns to Death LP, but holistically, when you look at the career of Bitter End, what they've done, like, that's what I want for 2022. If Bitter End can get it together and get an LP out this year, I'd love it. But like, give us a Bitter End LP, another one.
Ooh,
don't you think we deserve it? We've been through a hard time. I think it'd be great.
Climate of Fear too. Come on.
Just think about what
Guilty is charged to. When I get off when we get off this fucking line, every time we talk about Bitter End, it is the number one band I go and listen to after we talk about.
Yeah, I think that their longevity, and they've just done such a cool thing with the way they operate as a band, and their records, no matter where your favorite is, I can hear an argument that their records just get better sequentially, you know, and that's rare.
Incredible, yeah.
Okay. Favorite cover? I like this question a lot. Favorite cover art cliches? So, for lack of a better word, black and white live shot, tough poses, bricks, et cetera, et cetera. So, for me, I like the monochrome live shot of a crowd that might be awkwardly cut off.
Okay.
You know, so it's like a color saturation. It's black, but then they choose a color. Maybe it's green, maybe it's red, whatever. And sometimes it's awkwardly cut off. It's usually not the choicest of shots, but there's always action going on. I can get in on that.
I would go like historic photos that are like repurposed for an album cover.
Yeah, maybe.
Not historic, but like old photos.
Yeah, and maybe blow them out, blow out the contrast, get on your punk shit for that, I think.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Hold on.
Just going to say people's faces.
I truly love people's faces as album art, but
Origin Style has been good. That's been a neat one.
Yeah, give me the question again.
What's favorite album art cliches?
Oh yeah, I mean, then probably people's faces for me is it's always a winner for me. I like people's faces so much, it draws me right into an album. I don't like a live shot unless it's legitimately heroic or insane, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's got to be really over the top. I do not feel a thing about a crowd shot. Not a thing. Your crowd could be going utterly bonkers. And I haven't been impressed by that since, you know, I was a kid. I don't know if it impressed me then. Because once you see it in action, once you see it, we've all made reference to this. Once you see that they were playing No Spiritual Surrender to get that shot, you're just like,
that's a cheat code.
The love is gone. Yeah. I also, for a motif, the cliche, the nuclear war, when it's done poorly, it sucks. Good. But
I love it.
Yeah, I'm always in. I'm always curious to see what elements they add in there. So good for that. You know, kind of tangentially related to this, the Minor Threat image, Ian on the steps.
Yeah.
If you really just look at the image, there isn't a lot going on, but it's very stirring when you think about it over the context, and it feels like there's a lot more going on to it. Am I reading too much, or do you guys feel similar?
I think it's fucking, it's very simple, but it's fucking, I mean, it's almost like the Restraining Order LP. Like, it's kind of like, there's nothing crazy about this picture.
Yeah.
But it's fucking perfect.
Yeah.
I don't know if I really love it, you know, like, it's iconic now, but it's like, it's a bit like so many things where they might become iconic because they're attached to greatness, not because they're really very special.
And then it was like copied for, and Out Come the Wolves.
That's true.
I never knew. I don't know why I didn't recognize that at the time. But they're like, oh, no, this is like the punk version of that. I was like, oh, shit.
Yo,
it's fucking awesome.
There's something about the way his head is in his hands and the relation to like the anger and frustration of the Minor Threat catalog that I think works. Just as an image, you could take away. But it's the fact that it's coupled so directly with the music that I think that it resonates with me. Okay, let's go. I actually have one question from the emails. We're doing mostly Instagram questions tonight, but there was one guy who emailed us just before we started recording. I'm not going to read the whole question because I want to give some anonymity here, but I thought you both might have unique perspective on this. Hey guys, questions related to the upcoming tour season, quote unquote, be it late 2021 or 2022. Person has a venue, and if possible, I'd like to get my spot more tied in with the touring circuit. I never did much booking for the bands I was in. They haven't been around for a while. I'm starting from scratch as far as contacts go. Where does this person start?
Fuck. What's the 2021 version of Book Your Own Fucking Life?
That's right. That's
kind of, that was, I mean, such a, like, and for the older team out there, like, that was such a fucking incredibly useful tool.
Yo, can you give fill in the unfamiliar on what
Book Your
Own Fucking Life is?
Sure. I mean, it was pretty much like a fucking an international, if I remember correctly, like an international phone book. Like, it's like a phone directory, and you go like, all right, fuck, I need a show in Burlington, Vermont. Let me look who's up in Burlington, Vermont. Oh, okay, so I can call, you know, Kathy, John, or Mike. They all do shows there. Right. Oh, cool. Okay. Oh, Spencer. Yeah, right. An actual human being that did shows there.
Yeah.
You know, and like, so it would list like all the contacts for like venues, all like the DIY promoters in that area, and like everywhere across the country. And like, you would say, like, you know, Bob would be like, I book shows in Brick, in Asbury, here, here, and here.
Yep.
Here's my my landline most of the time.
Here's the stuff I mostly do, but I also can do this stuff. Yep.
You know, like, and it would kind of give like a brief kind of advertisement for like what you could do in particular areas. And like, quite often before people had like, you know, had agents and all that sort of stuff, like, that's how we all booked shows for the most part. And then like, then once you went to Dallas twice and you went to, you know, or San Antonio and you worked with Willow, then you were good. Like, you didn't, like, then you didn't have to go back through the book. You had to
know who it is. Right. And maybe you go somewhere and the show wasn't great, but guess what? Somebody's like, oh, Tony booked the show. Yo, next time you come through, you got to book it with Jimmy. Here's Jimmy's info. Oh, Jimmy's over here. Let me introduce you. But this got you that show that you needed because you didn't have anything else. Patrick, is there any equivalent to Book Your Own Fucking Life in 2021?
Wall Street Bets subreddit.
Wall Street Bets subreddit.
I think that it's a good question. For the bands out there, it's a little easier. You put feelers out. You try to get contacts. You share them out. For somebody who's on the venue side, this fella actually asked us to pass along some contacts, so I'm going to do that. But it's not an easy proposition because we're so connected, but there's no source that's like this. And maybe there is that we're unfamiliar with. And if there is, I'd love to promote it because I think that there's sort of a swing. I think there's actually a large groundswell of people who would like to have more of a DIY network who don't necessarily know how to tap into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all internet based now. So it's like, what do you, you know, you see people go like, hey, need, you know, booked it. Like, I see this all the time, you know, that people go like, all right, so I have shows here, 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 and here, and here. I need these three dates filled, preferably in here, here, and here, here, here. Like, that's how I feel like people do it more these days. Like, folks that are like, don't have the contacts.
Yeah, they just throw it out to the ether. So that's not a bad way, honestly. You know,
yeah.
It does require, if you're going to do it well, you got to do a little hustle and grind, willing to ask people. Friends of friends is always my move. I think it's right. Really worth it to ask, like, hey, do you know anyone here? Oh, no, I don't know anyone in Cleveland, but I know someone in Columbus. Oh, okay, all right. You know, and you work it out.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, put it out into the ether. This person who has a venue is saying, hey, I'm looking to do this. You got to just put it out there. Reach out to bands, reach out to agents, reach out to the people. Let them know, hey, I'm here. I want to do stuff. I want to make it work. And you start small and big and kind of grow from there.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or, are they going to say it? Yes, vegan and veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring, maybe gardening. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. That is the type of meal I prefer. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Now, I'd like you to head to factormeals.com/axetogrind50. That's numeral 50. And use code AXETOGRIND50, that's numeral 50, to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's insane. That's code AXETOGRIND50 at factormeals.com/AXETOGRIND50. That's to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Crazy.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
All right, Pat and Tom, what are your favorite Jackson Browne songs?
Oh, let me look at the list here.
I mean, Doctor My Eyes, right?
He sold over 18 million. His first name is Clyde, dude. I wonder why he changed the name to Jackson Browne.
Jackson Browne is a cool name. Clyde Browne? Clyde
Brown, not as much.
Somebody's Baby is an absurd hit. You know what I mean?
Fantastic, but, yeah.
Take It Easy is also a crazy monster hit. You know, this is like the best possible outcome besides Steely Dan that you could listen to with your family in a car.
This is good. This is good car drive. This is good as someone who recently did a family road trip. This is good road trip music for sure.
For sure.
I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Mm.
No slight to the songs that have already been offered.
Yes.
One of my favorites, because I remember it as a kid, You're a Friend of Mine. It was Jackson Browne duetting with the big man, Clarence Clemons, from the E Street Band.
Ooh.
Do you remember that?
I do.
You're a friend of mine. It's good.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Muppets for some reason.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, why are you saying that?
It feels like it should have been incorporated somewhere into a Pixar movie.
Yo, speaking of Muppets.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I bring up a question? I have a question for the group.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Love it.
You guys are familiar with the Muppets, right?
Of course.
I am.
Like, you know, like you have a
Muppet Babies, let's go.
So I'm talking to friends of the pod, Brian and Nick. We're talking about the Swedish Chef.
Yep.
Yeah.
As a child, I was so incredibly freaked out by the Swedish Chef because he had human hands.
Oh, is that true?
The rest of his body was felt because he was a puppet, but because they needed the dexterity to like rip up the food and stuff that he was throwing. So if you watch him, full felt body,
yep, and hands,
human skin, fucking hands, and as a child, that did irreparable damage.
I Google image search Swedish Chef hands, which is very hard to say, by the way.
Yes,
and yeah, this is freaky.
It's off-putting.
Yeah. Swedish Chef had human hands.
Fucking freaked me the fuck out. And it's still kind of, to this day, I kind of go, I can't like look at it. Like,
apparently he's married because the human hand is wearing a wedding band. That's interesting.
Good for him.
We should do some more diving into the Muppet verse. Why not? I wonder what the
Dr. Teeth was always freaking out. It was very scary to me. Because his fish would blow up. Was that the guy? No. Who was the guy who would throw fish that blew up?
Oh, God.
Dr. Teeth was like the blues guy.
Muppet guy who threw fish. You mean Lou Zealand's?
Yes.
Yes, that's correct. Lou Zealand's act involved boomerang fish. I'd throw them away, except they keep coming back to me. He appeared in all of the Muppet movies except Kermit's Swamp Years. Wow.
Man, he's a wild
man. That's a deep cut. Boomerang fish. All right.
And if I may, to close out the Muppet segment, a song that I've become intimately a big fan of because of our friend David Anthony, Alkaline Trio covered Moving Right Along there's a Muppets, like, I think it's a soundtrack. It must be the soundtrack to that the movie that they did with Jason Segel.
Yes.
And like Weezer's on it. I think it has Weezer and Haley Williams. So Pat, please do not become triggered.
Oh, he's all in.
But they do like an Alkaline Trio version of Moving Right Along, and it's so fucking great. You should play for your kids, or even if you don't have kids, play for yourself because it's so much fun.
Do we think Lou Zealand is Ernie grown up or Ernie's father? From Bert.
They do look very similar.
Striking similarity.
And maybe it's
me that was calling on that name, Bob.
Lou, L-E-W, like Lou Alcindor. Zealand, like New Zealand.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, I know, a weird one. Ernie Zealand. I'm getting to the bottom of this mystery, guys.
Oh, it's like almost like a spitting image.
It's right there. I think there's something here. And look at find pictures of Ernie without a nightcap on or anything.
He's Do we know Ernie's last hair. Name? That would help.
I don't think Ernie ever got a last name. What is
Ernie? I'm throwing Ernie Zealand into the
Google. I already did, man. And nothing. Ernie's last name. Ernie does not have a – what is Bert and Ernie's last name? They're not related.
No. Listen. I mean, they're partners is from everything I've been able to tell.
Here's what it seems to be. It seems to be due to the striking resemblance that Lou is Ernie's father. However, he's senile or drug insane. He might be like a LSD-induced psychosis sort of thing. And Ernie is deeply ashamed of him and distances himself from his father by not using his last name.
I think that sounds right. And Bert kind of took Ernie in purely, yeah. pure, just there's no, I think they're almost too young. Like to me, they always resonated as younger than having some sort of intimate relationship. So maybe we don't oversee Bert's parents, or perhaps Bert also is just a successful young guy who is having to make it his own way.
Sure.
We've never confirmed Bert's employment status, but he seems like a go-getter. He could be working at the
nice apartment.
He could be working at the grocery store, right? You know? Sure. All right. Let's get back into the questions. Great Muppet dive. We should do a whole episode on the Muppets. quick, another side question. Our homie Danielle is sending all the hot stuff for you today, Patrick. She's obsessed with this show called My Big Fat Fabulous Life. One of the dudes on the show is obsessed with Drug Church. Are you aware of this?
What?
No, I'm not.
Yes. Buddy Bell apparently is obsessed. Oh, and here's pictures of him on Instagram wearing a cheer shirt. It's him celebrating the 1 year anniversary of Cheer. Birthday. Ha ha. My bad.
My big fat fabulous. Like, wow. All right, good for you.
I'll send you guys now
the screen. His fame, Pat's fame, now makes sense.
Right?
Like, so all the people that were coming to see his band and listening to his records were TLC fans.
Oh, he's had that demo. You've been looking for your target for so long, and it was right in front of us the whole time.
It was like Honey Boo Boo was really like the person you should have gone to.
Help me understand. This is a big guy. Oh, I think I've seen this guy. Sure.
Oh, he's a friend.
No. But honestly, that's yes, that's awesome. Yes,
he looks like a drug church fan.
The minor reality TV show celebrity can be into my band. I'm welcoming it.
Absolutely. Shout out to Buddy.
All right. Is Harley now the cooler Cro-Mag?
No. Look.
Mackie's the coolest Cro-Mag. Next.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah, we think we've come. I think we're actually defensive. We've given everyone in the Cro-Mags a pass at this point.
Yes.
They've circled all the way around the shame game. So we're all in.
I mean, just get off the internet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Just let us live and bask in the glory that are the 86 to 89 years.
Yeah,
and
we need to get on that the internet ban, the social media banning list, and say, all right, well, you took care of some big guns, but now Harley, JJ, they're ruining some classic shit for a lot of people.
Yeah.
All right. If we had to guess. What are some of the most sampled movies/director for hardcore intros?
Wow. I feel like anything with I feel like Pacino and De Niro always make the cut.
Yep. Gangster movies, mob movies, for sure.
Yeah. So Scorsese probably. Fuck. I'm trying to think. Horror movies to an extent. But I couldn't think of particular. I mean, who are some it's got to be Scorsese because he's got great written lines.
Yeah.
That play well as an intro to a hardcore song.
Yeah. Who would we say uses this the most? Is it fair to say that crust bands of a certain vintage and then also metalcore bands? Is that who would
almost
say?
Exclusively? Yeah, I would say.
Because I think
fair. There's some demo core. You got to remember all the demos
that use samples
across subgenres. Demos, the land of samples. And pop punk bands, man. Yeah, there was a time when pop punk bands couldn't believe samples.
Yeah, but they usually use Michael Rapaport talking about a woman.
Yeah, right.
Take Back Sunday did that, or
Spielberg style, like intimate moment, quiet scene. Kind of thing.
I mean, Converge did that. Fuck. It sounds like it's Diane Lane. Mm. Pat, are you familiar with the song? She's like, there are at least 100 guys that would kill to date me or something. And the next song, I think it's on the split with Agoraphobic Nosebleed. And the next song starts with fucking Jake yelling his face off.
Okay, so I cannot place that. I'm thinking in my head of ones that stick out in my mind. You've got Rosemary's Baby, right?
Yes.
So Indecision uses Rosemary's Baby. Zao.
Twice, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be right. Zao uses a full album of Event Horizon quotes, I want to say, which is really weird. Red Roses for a Blue Lady has the part from Can't Hardly Wait, maybe in the middle of it, which is so dated now that it's it's an absurdity. I urge everybody.
What could they have used with their, like, I am a sex machine?
No, they use the when he's like talking. No, is it? It's not Can't Hardly Wait. Ah, oh, fuck. What?
I mean, it might be. There are some scenes
not
where
another teen movie
directly to the camera.
Fuck. And that's not another teen movie. I would use that.
What a good movie.
Oh, great.
We're trying to pump up our YouTube at some point. We should do a full remote movie watch along of Not Another Teen Movie, where all three of us sync it up and watch it and just record an audio track. And
was that Anna Faris?
Yeah, she's in that for sure. Okay, yeah, I think who's it's not it's oh, who's the woman, the blonde woman who's in Not Another Teen Movie? Patrick, you know this.
Jamie Presley, the queen.
Yes, yes. The legend. Chris Evans, really, you can see him with his chops there. It's fantastic. What a movie.
Wow.
I think horror movies probably get a lot of samples, right?
Bleeding Through's famous one was the Boondock Saints.
Oh, so tasteless. Holy fuck.
Remember that? It was like, this place was Armageddon. There was a fire. Yeah.
All right. That's a good question. That's actually a good question to think about.
That's a great question. I would be curious, though, to see if there were like a certain – I feel like the actors are – I feel like Pacino and De Niro are pretty probably – the most repeated, but I'd be curious to see if it's like actually the most used is Eli Roth or something. Like, I'd be really curious to see if there was any way to kind of track that down.
Quantify. Yeah. I really lean in and agree with what you said there, Tom, but I'm hoping there's someone who's got the, some sort of compulsive disorder who would like to get really crazy.
I mean,
track all that stuff. Someone out there maybe has. So if you have, please reach out to us.
I mean, I feel like Pat finds himself in some Wikipedia holes. Get busy, buddy.
I'm currently, I have one AirPod in trying to figure out what this fucking Red Roses for a Blue Lady part is. I'll jump on the other thing next.
Jesus Christ.
All right. Let's see here. I'm going to go to the next question while he figures out his sample. Somebody said, what bands won't make it out of the pandemic? Name names. Okay. So we're going to play a game where we don't name names. Let me think of – I can confirm that I know of three bands that won't make it back when shows come back. Maybe they'll make it back for like a thing, but that are
– like a see you later kind of thing.
Yeah, functionally done, which is a shame. But also in conversation, I think we touched on it on the episode with Isaac. Time moves fast and time moves so slowly, you know.
Time keeps on slipping
into the future.
It's hard to say that because, I mean, like, Bob might know better than the rest of us. But, like, I mean, I have no indication. Like, are people quiet because, like, they're in the lab, or are they people quiet because it's over?
Yeah.
You're getting both. You're getting both is the thing. Yeah. And that's why. And
you're getting two LPs or like radio silence to never be heard from again.
Right. And you know, I think in some cases it's neither nor, because they just are kind of in a holding pattern. You know, there's some people who were straight cruising doing this full time, and some people who weren't. Like, there's just bands who weren't and were having a good time. And I think it's going to be interesting. I don't say that as a like, oh, because nothing's certain. Like, there's a whole lot
affects
of
more.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Who do you think this affects more? The career band or the, like, me and my buddies playing the weekend band? Like, who do you think is less likely to come back? Like, percentage wise, would you say?
The answer is the band between those.
That's exactly right. It's the band. It's the band who does a little bit. But not like the Weekenders are fine. The career guys are looking at it and going, all right, we got to get back on the road. Or the bands who are aspiring to be the career band are right there. But it's all the bands in the middle who tour enough. But this sort of slowdown, like the weekend band, the weekend rocker, who's just here and there, you know, one weekend every 2 months, this slowdown isn't that much to them.
No, and they hopefully were still able to continue to work and stuff. But the folks that, like, either don't make enough money to kind of withstand it, or don't make it, they don't care the money to them is immaterial.
Correct. It's just the activity and momentum of having stuff and having that next acorn that they're going after. Like, okay, hey, we're home for a couple months, but we got that 2 week run. And, you know, like there's, you know,
it's a lot.
I hope that there's some people who got some new energy and are doing some new things. You know, I think we're seeing that around. We're seeing plenty of that. And it's going to be a different landscape.
Can I just take you to the year 2000?
But I really believe that there's one person out there for everybody. That's what this is about. It's not just some sappy love letter telling you how my heart stops every time that I see you. It's in there.
Wait for it.
And there's this really amazing person inside of her that no one even bothers to see.
Everybody, that's the year 2000.
That was Can't Hardly Wait. That was Ethan Embry professing his love to Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Great job, Tom. Wow.
I love that movie. I love
very
the movie.
Very good movie.
Very funny thing. They, a piece of, because I, that was one of the first DVDs I ever owned.
That's awesome.
And the one of the directors, whatever the fucking extras, I guess they had to bring people back to reshoot, and he already dyed his hair. They had to paint his hair blonde, like literally paint his hair to match his hair in the rest of the movie.
Love it.
Ugh, that's so cool. All right. Keep those thoughts nearby, because we're going to do a couple more questions, and I have a thing we're going to close with today. What's the next big trend in hardcore sonically? Metalcore went, melodic is uprising. I don't think metalcore went. I think... Yeah. We're sort of in a generalist era right now. There's a real – this is the cornucopia era. There's a lot going on, lots of different sounds. I think – this is a conversation I had. I think the more extreme versions of things have been doing really well. I think the death metal influence stuff, be closer to the edge of things. Not deathcore, but really gnarly shit. Like Gate Creeper, that record's huge.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit askew from what we normally cover on here, but it's not that much. And I bet that a solid 65% of people listening either love Gate Creeper, like Gate Creeper, or really could like Gate Creeper. So,
fuck yeah. Especially this new record.
Right. So I think that's going to continue to do well. I don't know. I really tell you, look at what Close Casket's got coming up for the next year. I think he's got some pretty big projects. And I think that the new Vane record could be really big. I have no insight on it. I haven't heard it or anything, but I have a feeling when that record comes out, it's going to be a big deal. So the extreme and harsh, noisy stuff, I think, is going to continue to have an audience that is loved in hardcore, but also finds a place in other rooms as well.
I just want to give a shout out to the, I'm in a Red Roses for Blue Lady hole right now.
Jesus Christ.
I just want to give a shout out to the co-owner of Eulogy Records, who designed the layouts for This Day Forward, The Transient Effects of Light on Water, which, by the way, I've owned that record, and I did not put a period after every word in The Transient Effects of Light on Water. That's particularly annoying. Red Roses for a Blue Lady, Return to Melancholy, This Day Forward, Fragments of an Untold Story Born by Shunning the Opportunity. Guys, that's too many fucking words. You were still a decent band up through this time. That's a weird fucking selection of words. Until the End, Let the World Burn, This Day Forward, Kairos, and Hoods, The King is Dead. Oh, and On Broken Wings, It's a Long Goodbye. Did the art for all of those. I want everybody to go check the art on those out, which it's just very... It's very fun, very of an era, very, very early 2000s, very like one Photoshop filter. It's great.
Got it.
Will do. All right. Two more, then we've got our closing bit here.
Oh, no.
No, it's going to be fun. You're going to enjoy it a lot.
Is it going to be a game that me and Pat?
No game. It'll just be a convo. And we still got to do our fake or real early 2000s metalcore album names. A la what you just read, Patrick.
Sure.
Best band with multiple front persons at once, like Path of Resistance type thing.
Oh.
So we're talking about more than two, I guess?
Oh.
I mean, I would go two or more, right?
Yeah, it's got to be two or more, because otherwise, it just too dedicated. It's got to be too dedicated.
Right.
Okay, all right.
But I mean, it's all right. Do they have to be solely singers?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So like the His Heroes Gone tragedies of the world.
Yeah, they're out. Count. They're out.
All right, mine would be, No Redeeming Social Value. I watched a video of them recently when they had two singers.
Good,
super story. Fucking fun. Scarhead with two singers. Yeah. Any of the singers, Isaac and anybody, was awesome.
Saw that live. Yeah.
Fucking so much fun. I'm trying to think who else. Like, fuck. Like, who's like a? I feel like it go either way, because sometimes when there are two singers, they go for like the comedy shtick,
right?
You know what I mean? All right. So, a band with two singers that I would not put in this list, but a funny piece of info. If anybody watches UFC, do you guys watch UFC at all?
Yeah, time to time, yeah.
So there's a ref that's in there that he's a shorter very Irish looking, pugilistic looking guy. Always wears long sleeves and gloves, like when he's in there. His name's Keith. Yep.
Yeah, I've seen him.
I've seen the ref with that. Yeah.
Yeah. He was from a Long Island hardcore band called GFY.
Oh, yeah, familiar.
That's him.
Huh.
Sadly, the other singer, this dude Lou, passed away. Like, nice dude. But yeah, he was one of the singers in GFY. And then like one day I was watching UFC and they're like, and the referee, Keith Peterson. I was like, that's it. I was like, holy fuck, it's him. And it's Keith Peterson. He was involved in like a very this dude Dominic Cruz was like a really like kind of like an all-time fighter. Keith called the fight and Dominic Cruz thought it was too early. And then Dominic Cruz like the next day was like, the referee smelled like cigarettes and alcohol. Like totally threw him under the fucking bus.
Wow.
But it was like maybe 6 months ago, whatever. And then I had run into him. He was coming back from Vegas from refereeing fights. And we talked about like they had like the Fight Island. Mm-hmm. And like all the stuff in Abu Dhabi, and like the amount of quarantine time that goes into being there for that one night is like incredible. Because this was like being a referee, not a full time job.
Yeah, wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, but like he was like, yeah, he's like, you have to take like 2 weeks off. He's like, my real job wouldn't let me fucking do it.
Ugh.
But yeah, so GFY, because amazing. One of the guys is on TV. And you watch them on pay-per-view every month. So
that's pretty cool. Other connection to hardcore, famous UFC photographer who was doing UFC photography for a long time. Do you know this, Tom?
Dave Mandel.
That's right. In Decision Records, Dave Mandel. Did it for a long time. I ran into him in the city. Maybe it was a day I was in the city to record, or maybe I was there for NYU stuff. And I ran into him just walking down the street. It was awesome and caught up with him.
Great dude.
Yeah.
And also, just while we say that, he has a family member that's going through some stuff.
Oh.
And they're doing a bunch of like Indecision Records related like shirts. I know like Strife put out a shirt from like their Indecision era. Yeah. And like they're trying to raise money. I mean, so it's out there. It's on the internet. So I'm not telling any stories. Like his sister has cancer.
Oh. Mm.
So like they're doing a bunch of different benefit stuff to kind of help raise money, because God knows, even if you have insurance, that's not enough. And like they're doing like, I think they're going to start like repressing some of their kind of out of print stuff, and there's different merch ideas and stuff. So like if you like look up Indecision Records.
Yeah, if you Instagram.com/, you know, you can find them. They're at Indecision Records. Find them.
Yeah, so look out for that and help out if you can.
Thank you for that shout out. Sure. Okay, let's see this. What was the other? Okay, this is the last music question, then we're going to get into the fun. Skank beat or D beat?
Skank beat. Nah, that's tough to say.
All right, define skank. So is that the, like, pick it up ska beat, or is that the, like, slow and low, like, skank, like, like, I'm fucking.
I think skank beat is, like, skank mosh part, like, two-step mosh part kind of thing. Skank beat. Yeah, exactly.
So you've just named two of my least favorite punk
genres,
hardcore beats.
Yep. So
it's a coin flip.
So where's it landing?
Yeah. I'll go, is it on the corner? Like, what?
You know what? 2021. I'm going. I'll go D beat.
Okay,
I would go D beat as well.
I'll level the playing field and go skank beat, but I like both. So, guys, we're not playing a game, but we're going to talk about something that I think all three of us like on a low key way. We're going to talk about 90s teen comedies. And
whoa.
I want to, so if you only are here for the hardcore, thank you. Follow us, Patreon, blah, 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 blah. Here we are going to the fun conversation. I want your clarification on, is this good grade or bad? And does it qualify as should this be canonical teen movie from the 90s? You guys ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
Clueless, 1995.
Great.
Yeah.
Good, canonical. Good. Not great to me. At the time, it was better than it is. 10 Things I Hate About You.
That's 1999. Good, not canonical.
Dude, you're out of your mind. It's great and canonical.
Mm.
Tom's right. Why do you think it's not great, Patrick?
Oh, I think it's a 100% a step down from... step down from Clueless, certainly a step down from a step down from I just think it's second, I think it's second tier by any standard.
Okay.
Based on Taming of the Shrew.
No, please, all points in the world for being clever, but what the fuck do I care?
Because it's got fucking Letters to Cleo in it, and Kay Hanley is a queen.
Shout out Heath Ledger. Right.
Rest in peace, buddy.
She's All That, 1999.
Second tier.
Good.
Yeah, good. Good.
Yeah.
Not agree. Good, not great. Is it in the canon? It's on the fringe. Yeah, I think it's in there.
It's in there.
Okay.
All right, Bob.
Yeah.
While we're on that, I'm not going to name names.
Yes.
Kurt Schilling.
Do you think he belongs in Hall of Fame?
No.
But do you remember the rumor about one of the...
Oh, yeah.
Not Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yes, the other...
That's not true, is it?
Not true. No, not true. A good rumor, though.
Very good rumor. I mean, good for... All right, that makes sense. Same last name.
Here's one that is listed in the Google romantic teen comedies from the 90s that I don't think belongs here. American Beauty, 1999.
That's not a comedy.
Yeah, it's not very comedic.
And it's not a teen movie. The fuck?
Well, I mean, in a creepy way, it is.
Yeah, true. But it's not. It's the star of the movie is clearly a middle-aged man. It's about a middle-aged man.
And canceled.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Can't Hardly Wait. 1998.
God tier, absolutely.
Yeah, it's 100% God tier.
Wow. It's very good, and I'm a JLH stan. But there's other movies here that I like more. But it's clearly top tier and clearly canonical. You guys are God tiering it. I like that.
I could watch this. I could put it on. Like, Pat's going to go listen at the bitter end. I'm going to go put on fucking Can't Hardly Wait.
If you've never noticed, look at how similar the logo and box cover, like poster or whatever, the image for Can't Hardly Wait and this next movie are American Pie.
Oh, 100%.
They're like the same thing. American Pie, 1999.
Oh, yeah.
Classic and God tier. Classic and canonical. One of the...
Canonical. Is this better than Can't Hardly Wait?
Probably. I have a soft spot in my heart for Can't Hardly Wait, but I can see why American Pie... I mean, American Pie was like kind of like a game changer.
It was a huge
one. I'm going now.
I think all three of us might say Can't Hardly Wait was better.
Yes.
American Pie was a little sillier, but it doesn't make it better to me. American Pie is good. The rewatch value is there, but maybe not huge. See, now here's one. Dazed
and Confused. I just want to say regarding that.
Yes.
We were supposed to, I believe it was Self-Defense Family at the time, not Interview. Self-Defense Family was touring Europe or UK with Tiger's Jaw.
Yeah.
And there was a snowstorm, so we missed the first day. We flew in a day late, so we missed the first or maybe two shows. And we sat in a loft in Brooklyn and watched every single American Pie, include like And I mean all the spin-offs.
Going deep.
Every spin-off.
Like, there are ones that didn't make the theater.
Yes.
Oh, man.
After three, it's really.
I've seen them all.
Wow. Diminishing returns, I would say.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
So, all right. Here, next one here, because I don't think this fits, despite it being teen, being 90s, Dazed and Confused, 1993.
Fantastic movie. All-time
great movie.
Fantastic movie. Great. Must watch.
Or if you did.
Does not fit the genre. To me, this genre starts with Clueless and runs maybe to American Pie 2, but, you know, it's right there.
It cuts off before American Wedding.
Yes. Fuck yeah, it does. But Dazed and Confused is a great movie. It's not a 90s teen comedy. One that I think is low rated, but I want to see what you guys think. Jawbreaker, 1999.
I didn't like it.
Yeah, my memory of it is not that I loved it.
All right, one of my main memories of it is watching Marilyn Manson is in it, and he's having weird sex in it.
That is true. With Rose McGowan.
But because it was when they were dating,
and
he's not dressed up as Marilyn Manson. He's like some like weird, like fat old weirdo.
Yeah, it's like she's having sex with a weird trucker, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
On a bed over the girl she killed, essentially.
Yes.
I think it's. I don't know if I'd put it in the canon, but I think it deserves mention in the conversation. It's like a weird low tier demo from New York hardcore in the late 80s.
I'll revisit.
Yeah, please do. It's a fun watch, and I think it holds up in terms of.
There was like a gay heart too. Is she in that too?
I think so. Yes, she is. Okay, here's one I think is not in my canon, but is a good movie. Election.
Yeah, same.
Good movie.
Yeah,
not part of the teen comedy genre though.
No,
has too much going on. All right, let's see what else here. Has either of you seen National Lampoon's Senior Trip from 1995?
No.
Me neither. I'm curious about it. Is there any chance it's good?
Definitely not.
Hold on, I'll let you know. I think I have seen it. Let's see.
It feels, honestly, Tom, this feels like a movie I would have gone to see in 1995. Even though it was R-rated, I probably could have got in.
It's got a young Jeremy Renner in it.
Is this pre or post PCU? I think it might be post.
Post.
Saw PCU opening.
Piven or Jeremy Renner?
That's I'm thinking of Piven. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, PCU is 94. I went and saw PCU opening weekend in the theater. So excited for it. It was not. It didn't live up to my expectations. Still liked it.
hold on. I'm reading the write up for National Lampoon Senior Trip.
Yes.
On Wikipedia. Here's the sentence. At this point, the students go on a rampage, celebrating over Moss passing out, and throw another party while Carla Morgan, the school slut, puts makeup on Moss. Now, here's what I want to point out. The two words that are hyperlinked to other Wikipedia articles are slut and makeup.
Oh, my God.
Why is slut a hyperlink to another Wikipedia article?
Bless up.
Jesus, fuck.
All right, here's my last one to put out to the jury. And if we missed any, I apologize. And if somebody wants to email us about late 90s teen movies, that email will definitely be read on air. Is the 1999 film Never Been Kissed, starring Drew Barrymore, a 90s teen comedy?
No.
I don't know if it's a comedy.
Tragedy.
Is it?
I mean, if you're doing that, then what about My Girl?
I know. Oh. Would you watch Never Been Kissed again?
Yeah, why not?
If the next time I see it, it'll be the first time.
Oh, wow. It's pretty bad. Apparently Jessica Alba's in it. Did I forget that? Damn. Interesting. All right. Any others that you think deserve mention in our late 90s teen movie dive?
Damn. I'd have to think.
Or use Google. It's in front of you.
It's true.
Providence, I'm totally unfamiliar.
It's good. It's not. It's a comedy, but in a very light way.
And it's got a one of the Baldwins, but not Alec. Maybe Billy. Is that Billy?
That sounds right.
Steven, probably.
It's Steven.
Well, there's Steven, who's the blonde one. There's Billy, who's very squinty.
Okay, hold on. Here's IMDb's 50 best teen movies from the 90s.
Okay.
I'm going to roll through some of them really quick.
You go.
pump up the volume.
Good movie. Incredible. Wouldn't put it in this genre.
not at all. It's not a.
It's 80s movie more.
Yeah, it's 1990, but yes, you're absolutely right. Crybaby.
No.
No.
Here's my one of my personal favorites of all time. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Yeah, but not a teenage comedy.
Yeah, good movie, but it's pre-Clueless and doesn't have that, like, hey, this is a teen romp.
Okay. Boys in the Hood.
No.
What's funny about that?
Not a thing. It's the
an all-time great movie, but God damn it.
That's number four on the list. Okay. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Great movie. It is a teen movie, but not a 90s teen comedy.
Okay, but here is one that I refuse to, I won't take any response except that it is a teen movie. You can then tell me if it is funny or not, or a classic or not. Encino Man.
Oh, again, saw at the, I think I might have seen that at the movie theater at the Latham Circle Mall.
Shout out.
Major shout out. Yes, it is definitely a teen movie. Doesn't fit this qualification, but it's in, there's a early 90s teen movie genre that is different. It's, there's a pre-Clueless and a post-Clueless era. This fits in with the Don't Tell Mom, the era.
Okay, I'm gonna race through these next ones just till 10 because there is one that we have forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
Heavenly Creatures.
I don't even know that.
Not enough.
It's a very young Kate Winslet, and it's directed by Peter Jackson. It's very well regarded, if I recall, but I do not think it's remotely a comedy.
Okay.
Clueless is next. And then, did we say Empire Records?
No.
Because that makes the list.
Definitely does. It's the Empire Records is the bridge between this genre, which I will put it in the teen comedy, but it's not totally comedy. It's like romantic comedy. And it bridges the gap between Clueless and Dazed and Confused.
Done. I'm happy. All right.
What about Cruel Intentions? Not a comedy. Is it adjacent to the teen 90s Rocco?
It bang? Are you answering? Does it bang?
Of course it fucking bangs.
But there's a bunch of horror movies around that time too that were all like teen horror movies.
Like Fear.
I know what you did last summer, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Fear. Great movie.
Fear.
Yep.
All right. I'm in a fucking house.
That was the last time I gave a shit about Marky Mark.
I think that this, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer is teen comedy, teen romantic comedy horror movie.
Yeah, so Scream, yep, so is
yeah, for sure.
Idle Hands, so is, you know.
Okay. All right. This was a great exercise. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. More on late 90s teen movies and Reddit investing next time.
And Human Hands on Puppets.